One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
All right, so Matt, I realize that there is a fine line between a numerator and a denominator. Only a fraction of people will find that funny.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. Yeah.
It's good.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Hey, I'm good, brother.
Excellent, excellent. So, real quick, we want to say go check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. You can find a list of shows that we're associated with in the Podbelly Network, and it may be shows that you wouldn't find anywhere else. Promise you're going to like something on there. So go check it out at podbelly.com. We also want to thank tonight's sponsors, Lomi, HelloFresh, and BetterHelp. And we'll talk more about them throughout the episode.
All right, Adam, let's take a minute and talk about one of our newer sponsors, Lomi by Pila.
I love Lomi.
I know, it's amazing. And you'll hear how much we love it. You know, Adam, you compost, Amanda and I compost, and it becomes problematic at times because you've got to have a spot outside. Mm-hmm. It's getting cold. We're not going out there and turning it over like we should. So the Lomi is just, it's amazing because not only are we producing good quality dirt for our plants and our garden, okay, we're helping the environment and reducing our trash.
Yep.
So everybody's going, what? Well, how do you do that? That all those things sound great. I'll tell you how you do it. You get a Lomi. And a Lomi is a countertop composting machine that will take your food scraps and turn them into dirt. And if you think it sounds like magic, it almost is.
It basically is magic. I'm blown away every time I turn that thing on. And like you said, the composting is a hassle, especially like during the summer. It will bring flies around the house and it stinks. We don't have enough room in our yard to get it far enough away from the house to where the bugs aren't a problem. And then if you open that door or walk out there and get near it, it stinks because, I mean, it's decomposing plant matter and such. So it's going to stink. One of the awesome things about Lomi that I love and Ashley really loves is that it is stinkless. You can't smell it. You put the stuff in there and click the lid down, and it can sit inches from your nose and you cannot smell it. It's got two activated charcoal filters in there, and you would be amazed. When you pop the lid off and stick your head in, you go, oh yeah, there is stuff in there. But with it closed, you'll never know it.
Yeah, and you think about how smelly your trash can get when you scrape, you know, your food scraps from, you know, mealtime into the trash can. You know, it begins to smell. our dogs start to get a lot of interest in the trash can when there's food scraps in here. So now instead what we do is we take everybody's plate and we scrape it into the loamy.
Yep.
And, you know, our trash, we make less trash for one, but now we're taking those food scraps and turning them into something that we can use that's beneficial for our plants, our house plant, and our garden next summer.
That's right. And like you said, when you do that, you put your food scraps into the loamy, your trash, your kitchen trash stops stinking like trash. And it's a big pet peeve of mine from work in the food industry. I hate the smell of trash because if you work the food industry, you understand what I'm talking about. But by putting the food scraps in the loamy, you eliminate that smell in your kitchen from your trash. And you pick the setting on the loamy and you let it go. You can hit the quick one and you will have dirt in the morning when you wake up that you can go throw in the garden, throw away if you want to, if you don't have plants, or go sprinkle it around your house plants. You can do the long mode, and the long mode saves beneficial bacteria in the dirt at the end of the thing because it doesn't get as hot, and so it's better for plant growth and all that. And they've got a third mode that if you buy the plastics from Loamy, you can buy plasticware and plates and forks, spoons, you can throw that stuff in the frickin' Loamy and it will turn to dirt, which is actual magic, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It is like magic. You know, we do the grow mode. You use that little activating tablet in there, and in about 16 hours or so, you've not only eliminated your food scraps, but you have made enriched quality dirt that your plants are going to absolutely love.
Right. You know? And we have been contacted by a few listeners already saying that they have purchased a Loamy after hearing about it from us, and they love it. So if you want to start making a positive environmental impact or just make cleanup easier after dinner, then join Matt and I in the Loamy crusade here, trying to get everybody in the world to have a Loamy. And what you need to do is go to loamy.com, loamy.com/grave, grave, and use our promo code GRAVE to get $50 off your Loamy.
Yeah, that's $50 off when you head to loamy.com/grave and use our promo code GRAVE, GRAVE, at checkout. Food waste is gross. Loamy is your solution. The holidays just around the corner, Loamy will make the perfect gift for someone on your shopping.
So, Matt, I don't have anything. Believe it or not, I've got nothing. So I'm going to appease all the haters out there and we'll get straight into the episode. So, Matt, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
So tonight, we are going to head to the town of. Now, I've heard it pronounced two ways, Stanton or Staunton. What? Anyway,
Staunton.
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 Okay. But it's, I think it's Staunton, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now that we've got all that out of the way. Let's talk about where we're gonna look at. We are going to look at the DeJarnette Sanitarium, and like other mental health facilities we've looked at, it's pretty haunted.
Yep.
There are some pretty fascinating stories that have come out of this place.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and we have to thank our research assistant, Jeff, for suggesting this topic, because Matt and I were not thinking about it, and Jeff brought it up, and we looked into it, and we went, yep, we're going to do this.
Yeah. It's quite fascinating, not just from the haunting aspect, but the story of the facility itself and its enigmatic founder. He is such a, I want to say he's an interesting character, but that is, that's an understatement. Plus it makes it sound like that. I kind of appreciate what he did.
Yeah. That's being too generous to him.
You're going to see this. He's more, he would be more infamous than famous. Yeah. I assure you.
This fool was something else. I tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, let's get into it. Like I said, the history behind the building and the founder are pretty incredible. So, Adam, tell us about the DeJarnett Sanitarium.
All right. So, as we always say, go down to the bottom of our show notes and check our sources. You can find where we found all this information, and you can continue the research because there may be some stuff that we left out just for sake of time. But it may be something that you're like, well, why didn't they cover this? Well, go check our sources and you can read on about it. So, and I will say that as Matt alluded to, our pronunciation of these places is probably not accurate. Feel free to correct us, but in a polite manner. Don't go, y'all's accent, screw that up. Y'all are terrible. Just correct us, and we're going to do our best. So the DeJarnett Sanitarium was founded in 1932 by Dr. Joseph DeJarnett, who was also the director of the nearby Western State Hospital. The sanitarium was a private unit for middle-income patients that operated separately from the government-supported state hospital. Now, DeJarnett was a respected doctor among the white Virginia elite at the time, but his career would ultimately be defined by his strong support of eugenics, specifically the forced sterilization of the mentally ill and others he deemed, quote, defective. So yeah, you can already tell we're getting into that. This fool was something else here.
Yeah, what a peach. You know?
Oh, yeah. What a peach. So to understand what happened at the DeJarnett Sanitarium, we need to look at Dr. Joseph DeJarnett, his beliefs and his history, because understanding what he believed in will kind of give you insights on how people were treated there without us having to go into some of the crazy gory detail of some of this stuff. We will talk a little bit about it, but we won't go into too much horrific detail just for our mental sake here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who was Joseph S. DeJarnett? And this comes from Encyclopedia Virginia is where I got some of this information. Joseph Spencer DeJarnett was born on September 29th, 1866 in Spotsylvania County. He was the son of Elliot Hawes DeJarnett, formerly a captain in the Confederate States Army, and Evelyn May Magruder DeJarnett. Now, his mom educated him and prepared him to enter the Medical College of Virginia, from which he graduated in 1888. He considered himself the genetically gifted descendant of colonial Virginians and practiced at Richmond's R.E. Lee Camp Confederate Soldiers Home. That was a mouthful. For a year before joining the staff of the Western Lunatic Asylum. Now, after 1894, it became Western State Hospital, which I feel like, Matt, we've mentioned that before.
We have. We've mentioned it in reference to other other facilities and how they operated at the time.
Right.
Yeah. We've brought it up before.
So it comes back. It makes another Graveyard Tales appearance. Now, on February 14th, 1906, he married a colleague and fellow physician, Chertsey Hopkins. I like that name, Chertsey, for some reason. I don't know why.
I do, too. That's kind of cool.
Chertsey Hopkins. Well, they had no children. She discontinued practicing medicine after their marriage, and she ended up dying on December 7th, 1947. Now, DeJarnett became the first president of the Augusta County Medical Society in 1904, and in 1906, he was appointed superintendent of the Western State Hospital. Reflecting the reform ethos of the progressive period, he revamped the hospital's therapeutic standards, banned physical restraints, unlocked many patients' rooms, and instituted more sympathetic treatment, which seems counterintuitive when we learn a little bit more about him. But that's why I thought this part was interesting. When he was at the Western State Hospital there, he actually let up on a lot of the rules and regulations for these patients. Now, during his administration, the hospital expanded in size, including a number of buildings and additions Desjarnais designed himself, and one of which bore his name, which is this one. In 1932, adjacent to Western State, he opened a self-supporting, semi-primitive mental hospital for middle-income patients, which 2 years later, the General Assembly renamed the Desjarnais State Sanatorium. Now, Desjarnais was in the vanguard of Virginia's eugenic sterilization movement. In his 1908 annual report, he recommended that the state prohibit marriage among the insane, alcoholics, epileptics, syphilitics, people with tuberculosis, and the, quote, feeble-minded.
Feeble-minded. That is a horrible term. Yeah,
I hate that term. And we've had to talk about it before, because there's been some other doctors during this time period at hospitals and sanitariums that we've talked about that have used that term. I hate that term, but we have to talk about what they thought in order to understand them. So
this was the language they used,
right?
You know, medical language at this time was very insensitive.
Oh yeah.
And look, I'm not hypersensitive. But I mean, there were a lot of old medical terms that, you know, even by any standard were just horrible.
Yeah.
And this is one of them.
Yep. And the fact that he recommended that these people that he deemed, I guess, lower on the status.
Yeah.
Here, he said that they should be prohibited from getting married. Yeah. And I don't understand it, man. I really don't. But again, there's a lot of stuff that doctors and people did back then that I'm not going to understand.
Well, and again, it all speaks to how poorly mental health was viewed around this time in the early 1900s, and what little understanding medical science had. So, you know, the idea that any type of mental illness is, you know, can be genetically passed on is just trying to put everything in one basket and say, this is it. Mm-hmm. This all fits. And that's not true at all.
Right.
You know, so in an attempt to somehow prevent more people from being born with these illnesses, he says, yeah, let's not let them get married.
Right.
Well, since when would having an illness cause you to lose your personal rights?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You have, it doesn't matter if you have tuberculosis or epilepsy or are an alcoholic, you still have the personal right to be able to get married. And yeah. He's pushing for the personal rights of these people to be taken away, which is kind of BS. But as we get farther into who Desjarnais was, it will become pretty clear as to why he thought this. Now, Desjarnais argued, this goes on to say, that the, quote, mentally disabled people should be sterilized because it amounted to a crime and a burden on society to allow them to procreate. I'm just going to pause for effect there. I can't say anything about that I'm allowed to say on this show. So I would have a long string of beeps that I would have to edit in here, and I'm not going to do that. Now, he relentlessly demanded that the state pass on sterilization statutes and, building on the eugenic theories of the country's most prominent scientist, he gained recognition as a leading authority in eugenics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after 16 years of lobbying, during which Desjarnais spoke before medical societies, social workers, university students, and reformers, the General Assembly authorized eugenic sterilization in 1924. Amazing. And not in a good way. That's just... Now, he then took part in arranging a court case to test the statute's constitutionality. Desjarnais testified in support of the state's involuntary sterilization of Carrie Buck, an allegedly feeble-minded 18-year-old Charlottesville woman. In Buck versus Bell in 1927, the Supreme Court upheld Virginia's sterilization statute, a ruling that authorized the sterilizations of about 8,300 Virginians and 60,000 other Americans before 1980 in the more than 30 states that enacted similar laws. Desjarnais performed many of the 1,200 operations that occurred at Western State during his tenure.
Yeah.
We'll keep crazy, plugging away. Right? I can't say this is crazy enough, so we'll just keep plugging away. So this says that the vigorous implementation of Virginia's eugenic sterilization statute, and Virginia trailed only California in the total number of people sterilized, but it did not satisfy Desjarnais. By May 1930, he had sterilized 33 women by tubal ligation, 60 men by vasectomy, and 5 people by X-ray exposure. That's got to take a lot of X-ray to do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's why when pregnant women go in and they have to have an X-ray, say if you injure your knee and you're pregnant, they're going to put this big lead cover over top. I don't know if it's lead anymore. But anyway, it's going to block the X-rays, from your belly.
Yep.
And because they know that, you know, exposure to X-rays can cause problems.
Right.
And so to purposefully expose somebody to this type of X-ray to the extent that it actually sterilizes them, it's not a situation where that's going to be the only thing they come away with.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
It's going to cause other problems. There's going to be other side effects. So, you know, even if you look at things, oh, well, that was a very humane way to do it. Is it humane to do this in such a way that you're potentially exposing them to other damage?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just easy.
Yeah. It was just easy for him.
Yeah.
But that brings up a thing I've always wondered about, Matt, on a kind of related note, but not. When you go in to have an X-ray, you're sitting there under the X-ray, and everybody else in the room is putting on these lead-lined everything, and you're like, look, if you wear one of those, why is this okay for me to get? I don't like that. Give me one of those.
It's because they're in there all day, every day.
Whatever excuse you got to make, Matt, I'm just saying. If you're X-raying my arm, give me a shield for the rest of me.
I had so many X-rays when I was a kid from getting hurt all the time that my mom said I should glow.
Yeah. Well, who's to say parts of you doesn't? I mean, you could glow in the dark in places.
Well, that's for another show.
Oh, yeah. That's Patreon. So to get back into it, Desjarnais remarked in the January 1931 issue of Virginia Medical Monthly, quote, "We are just getting into good working trim and expect to sterilize 500 per year in the 5 hospitals," end quote.
Yeah.
The 5 hospitals.
He was excited about it.
Yeah. That the state operated there. He was stoked. Now, though he was far from the only advocate of eugenics at the time, Desjarnais was one of the most passionate and infamously commented that Nazi Germany was, quote, beating us at our own game, end quote. So, see, this is, it's starting to kind of come together as to what kind of guy Desjardins was here.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll just keep going because this puts more into him here. Following the atrocities of the Holocaust, the attitude toward eugenics in the United States went quickly downhill. Eventually, it was denounced as inhumane pseudoscience, leaving Desjardins' reputation irreparably tarnished, although the practice of forced sterilization would continue in Virginia well into the 1970s. But like I said, in 1932, he founded the Desjardins Sanatorium and would transfer patients to this newly formed clinic. There, he continued to perform countless sterilizations and medical experiments on patients such as electroshock therapy and lobotomies. And we've discussed the treatment of patients at other sanitariums in past episodes, but
it's pretty common here.
Right. He's not only doing forced sterilizations, but he's doing electroshock therapy, lobotomies. He's anything medical that you can think of, he's doing on these patients that are in his sanitarium. Now, in 1943, after the culture at Western State Hospital worsened, the board of directors removed Dr. Desjardins from his position due to his autocratic leadership style and the decrepit conditions of the treatments patients were receiving. Now, many former patients actually report being shackled to walls and floors, being malnourished, and the major overcrowding of the cells there. And the fact that they call them cells instead of rooms, that should give you some kind of hint into it as well.
Yeah. Oop, what a giveaway.
Mm-hmm.
It's cells, not rooms, you know. It was awful. But, you know, because record keeping was minimal at best and documentation of these surgeries was not required, there's very little evidence of the horrors that patients of Desjardins experienced.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was apparently common practice at the hospital to transfuse blood between patients at opposite ends of the psychiatric spectrum. Now, in one known case, Desjardins transfused blood drawn from a hyperactive patient and injected it into a depressed patient. Like that was going to do anything.
Yeah, like that. It's like replacing the oil in your car. It doesn't work that way.
Right. It was, you know, this seems almost medieval in thought. Like, oh, your blood humors are, you know, out of alignment. I mean, what?
Like the weird medieval medical treatments that we talked about in a Patreon. That's what this feels like.
Yeah. We'll take blood from this one and put it in that one. So hope maybe it'll even out. Why? I realize that medical science was still really growing at this time, but come on.
Yeah, it's still.
We already figured this out.
Right. I was going to say, it's still the 1940s. So
we
shouldn't still be thinking this. And I think most of the medical community probably aren't thinking this. Yeah. It's just this Desjardins fool that keeps doing it.
Like Theodoric of York, medieval barber.
And I realize I've called this guy a fool many times, but it just explains how I feel about him. That's the best way I can get it across on a PG-13 show.
But, you know, Adam, the facility, it also served as a place where parents would bring unruly children to admit them for care. But in many cases, children were just taken into the hospital without any problems at all. Other than their parents just didn't want them anymore. Kids were just abandoned there.
There was another place that kind of had something similar that we talked about.
Yeah, there were several. I mean, you remember the whole thing about, you know, a guy could have his wife admitted for, you know, the smallest, most ridiculous things.
Yep. And the one we talked about where the guy got remarried and the wife didn't want the kids. So instead of saying, well, no, they're my kids, he said, all right, let's send them to this hospital.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just seems in, I don't understand. But anyway. But these healthy children would mysteriously develop multiple ailments shortly after arriving. Several had new neurological problems that were potentially side effects of the experiments that had been performed on them. Now, some
I'm not
feel
surprised
like,
by that. If you're doing this stuff to people, you're going to create problems.
Yeah, that's right. And some people feel like, which is not unlike other mental hospitals we've researched, the negative energy present in that facility because of all of this that happened makes it a beacon for paranormal activity.
Oh,
attracting spirits and entities that may not have any real connection to the sanitarium at all.
Yeah. And I have a theory that we'll discuss kind of toward the end, but remind me that I have this theory to tell you.
All right. Remind Adam about theory. Okay. Just make a post-it.
There you go.
Now, former patients have described ghostly encounters while they were there, the most common being the appearance of shadow people.
All right, so let's take a second and talk about one of our longtime sponsors, HelloFresh. And Matt and I love HelloFresh, especially during this time of year, because it's the most festive time of year. And HelloFresh is here to help make the most of every moment. So you don't have to worry about planning the dinners. I mean, Matt has used it for Thanksgiving dinner, so you could use it for Christmas dinner as well.
Yeah.
If you want to. There's a lot of meals as well in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and you have to plan for these meals as well. Well, instead of doing all that, then you can just order from HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that delivers farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes right to your doorstep. You can skip trips to the grocery store and let HelloFresh make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. And that's why it's America's number one meal kit.
Yeah, and it's not just holiday meals. I mean, this time of year, you've got parties to go to, you've got shopping to do, you've got that Christmas pageant that you know your kid's in. Thinking about just regular weeknight dinners can really be a challenge. And you want to save some money. So you try to save on what you eat. HelloFresh is cheaper than grocery shopping, and it's 25% less expensive than takeout. So you can use those savings to get that extra holiday gift or go treat yourself. HelloFresh can help you eat better during all the holiday temptation. Lord knows there's plenty of them.
Oh, yeah.
Their meals have 20% fewer calories than takeout, so you can still have all that great flavor without the guilt.
That's right. And quality is HelloFresh's priority. Ingredients travel from the farm to your home in less than 7 days, so you know it's fresh every time. And Lord knows how long they sit on the grocery store shelf, so it's much fresher than a grocery store. And if you're traveling over the holidays, that's fine. HelloFresh has plans that work with your schedule. You can change your preferences, your delivery day, and address in just a few clicks. So let's say you're going over to Aunt Gertrude's house for a week or so, and you're like, I don't like what she cooks, so we're going to have HelloFresh sent over to Gertrude's house. You can change the address from yours to hers and go, oh, shockingly, HelloFresh is here. Don't worry about cooking. We've got it, Gertrude.
That's right. And it makes it so easy. My kids love it. When they see that HelloFresh box, they get super excited because they know they're going to get the help, and they know that dinner that night is going to be delicious.
So if you want to join us and order HelloFresh for your home, or like we said, Aunt Gertrude's home, all you've got to do is go to HelloFresh.com/Graveyard18 and use our code Graveyard18, that's GRAVEYARD18, for 18 free meals plus free shipping.
Just go to HelloFresh.com/Graveyard18 and use the code Graveyard 18, that's Graveyard 18, for 18 free meals plus free shipping. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. But since record keeping was poor, many of the stories have sort of become legends, because the evidence just isn't available to
him. Right.
Now, one story involving DeJarnette was his creation of a gas chamber in the basement. A gas chamber. According to the story, DeJarnette would place patients in the chamber and fill it with various noxious or even lethal gases in hopes that the exposure would have a beneficial effect on whatever mental illness the patient suffered from. It is said to have caused many deaths.
I'm sure.
But DeJarnette continued because he sincerely believed in this practice.
I know.
Again, it was just a theory.
Yeah.
You know, it was his own whacked out theory, and then he just starts implementing it with complete disregard.
Yeah, despite the evidence.
The patients under his care.
Despite any evidence, because he's got all this evidence to the contrary, that it's not doing anything, it's killing people or causing problems. He holds fast to his theory that, no, this is good for him.
Yeah. Now, it is important to point out that the story about the gas chamber, as far as we know, is just a story. Because there were no records, either they went missing or they never even existed at all, we don't have any proof other than anecdotal stories from former patients and people that were employed there. So because of those records, an actual death toll is not really available. But according to legend, the city of Staunton filed an official request in 1932 for the facility to stop using its crematorium. The town reported that it was being used far too frequently, reportedly anywhere from 10 to 30 times a day.
Oh, my Lord.
Okay. Smoke from the crematorium would pour out of smokestacks and was drifting into the town. Now, do some quick math here, and you get a potentially astronomical number of deaths.
Yeah.
And estimates put the hospital's death toll at somewhere near 10,000.
Wow.
Now, that is way more than other places we've looked at.
Oh, yeah. Way higher.
Yeah. The cemetery at Western State has 3,000 graves.
Whew.
But that's just the ones that are marked with headstones.
Right, and wasn't cremated.
Yeah, there's no way to count those that are buried in unmarked or even mass grave sites.
Mm-hmm.
It was rumored that those existed. And it doesn't include the cremations, as Adam just said. You know, so even at 3,000, you've got to at least double that number. For the people that died, had no family, had nothing, or shoot, they just didn't even care at the facility and just dumped them.
Right, right.
So you've got a really good background at how bizarre things were at DeJarnette Sanitarium and how all this negative energy just seemed like it was bringing in paranormal activity, more so than just the spirits of the tortured souls that died there.
Uh-huh.
Now, one ghost in particular is thought to be that of Dr. DeJarnette himself. And it is said that he still roams the halls of the institution. Visitors have reported seeing his apparition in the hallways and in his former office. Some even report hearing him shout, "Get out." There have been EVP recordings made inside the facility, and "get out" is a very common response. So, you know, they've attributed those EVPs with Dr. DeJarnette. Of course, he wouldn't want somebody in there poking around what he was doing.
No, he wouldn't. Because be afraid they'd find out stuff about him that we've already found out, but he may not know we know. So,
yeah. Now, like I said, the paranormal enthusiasts have described this hospital as being a beacon for entities due to the volume of negative energy. This has led investigators to categorize the hospital as one of the most demonically active locations on the East Coast. Because we've discussed this with other places, that there's a big difference between seeing that stone tape, that just recurrence of past events, and an intelligent haunting where a spirit of someone who had passed on has this awareness of your presence and this either desire or in some cases ability to interact with you. But then there's things like a demonic haunting, you know, where an outside entity just decides, I'm going to feed on all this negativity that's here.
Mm-hmm.
And just shows up, sometimes multiple. And that presence of shadow people is another indicator. It's just negative energy. And there's very little known about the property that the facility is built on.
Right.
So there's probably some history there too. If the patients were experiencing paranormal activity while they were there.
Right. And I bet you they were. I bet you they experienced a lot of it that was either written off as something wrong, something going along with their mental disorder that they had or something.
Yeah. Because, I mean, they're going to pass that off as it's hallucination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's whatever. It's not real. But there have been reports of glowing red eyes.
Hmm.
Now, sometimes these red eyes even appear in groups, looking out from the darkness of the hall. Now, these reports come primarily from the second floor. And on the second floor, other visitors have even witnessed objects levitate.
That gets me. You see something levitating, because as we've spoken many times in the past about the amount of energy that these things would need to physically manipulate something here, that's insane.
Now, there was a story that came out from one particular investigation there where an object levitated right in front of several members of the team that were all standing around it. So they all had a visual from a different perspective to see that this was an actual physical object that they could reach out and touch that was floating right in front of them. But the activity is not limited to the rooms and the hallway. Outside on the grounds are where many people report the presence of shadow people. Often reported in groups, many experiences relate the movement of shadow people in a way that made them feel as if they were being surrounded.
Oh, that's got to be creepy. Oh, my God.
Yeah, now these shadow entities appear to be some sort of guardian of the building. But the stories tell us that walking up to the hospital at night will result in the alerting of the shadow guardians who will surround you and slowly attempt to lure you inside. And once inside, it said that no one leaves unchanged.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's a statement that you really don't want to hear.
I know. It used to be open for tours, and it was on a list of like a ghost tour in that area.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they necessarily at that time were allowed to go inside, but they definitely were on the grounds just outside the building.
Right.
And you know, I understand there's safety aspects to all this, and currently the building is closed to visitors, so you can't really even access that area around it. Now, this one was for Adam. I had to include this.
Uh-oh.
Some visitors have reported seeing ghostly children along the road leading up to Desjardins. Can you imagine? You know, you're driving along. It's like the thing where the signs say, you know, hitchhikers may be escaped mental patients.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen those. Yeah.
Hitchhikers may be ghostly children.
Yeah, maybe ethereal bodies that you can't touch or feel, but they will mess with you if you allow them in your car. Please do not stop.
That's right. Now, one of the most interesting legends associated with the Desjardins Sanitarium is that of a young boy in the 1950s who was admitted to the facility by his parents, who could no longer care for him. Now, the boy was supposedly healthy at the time of his arrival. Shortly after his admission, the boy lost the ability to speak. And a few months after that, he could no longer walk and was confined to a wheelchair.
Oh, wow.
So the nurses became close to this boy and would take him outside, and they would take him on walks, pushing him in his wheelchair around the ground. And at the end of the day, the boy would follow the nurses out in hopes that one would take him home with them. And the nurses would sadly have to tell him that he couldn't leave with them, but would often have to notify security to have him return to the building.
That's sad.
So after only 6 months, the boy passed away. Now, the nurses and the doctors that cared for him would report hearing his wheelchair rolling behind them after his death. And on occasion, they would see the apparition of the boy in his wheelchair at the gate as they were driving away. Yeah.
That hurts me. That's sad. This kid,
I know,
wanting to be taken home, and they can't take him home. And then even after death, he's still trying to do that.
Yeah. And if this story is even somewhat accurate, you know, this was a healthy kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in there, and this doctor starts doing all these experiments on him. And next thing you know, he can't talk.
Yeah.
And then he can't even walk. And there was nothing wrong with him, according to the story.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, in a video by father and son paranormal group Fife Paranormal out of Virginia, Jake Fife describes his experiences at Desjardins while working as a security for a local ghost tour group. He reports the sound of being followed by a wheelchair as one of his strange encounters.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Others have had similar experiences. And Jake says that a person being followed must turn and tell the spirit that they are sorry, but that he cannot leave with them. And then they must walk back up to the entrance to the hospital as if escorting the young wheelchair-bound boy back inside.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty interesting that they have to walk back in, like, to bring him back in.
Yeah.
And that's interesting to me.
So otherwise, I guess you would take him home.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm such a softy. I probably would. Yeah. Come on, get in. Let's go.
You would.
Before somebody asks any questions.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, babe, I brought home a ghost of a little kid that's in a wheelchair. Just, if you hear a wheelchair rolling around, don't worry about it. It's just him.
Just leave a toy in the hallway or something. He'll get it and be occupied.
That'd be me. stray dogs and stray cats and stray ghosts. I'm all about it.
Yep. I understand, now, man, but it still, to me, that is a ghost kid, and you know me and ghost kids. So as bad as I feel for him, I'd have to go. Nah, buddy, go with Matt. Go find Matt.
As bad as juju.
Mm-hmm.
Now Jake also recalls a night where he was trailing a tour group, just ensuring that there were no stragglers or wanderers, and he noticed someone standing over in the weeds where there was once a golf course. Now, it's interesting to point out that underneath the golf course is where the majority of the mass graves are said to be.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Talk about a hole in one.
Yeah. All in one hole. I can believe that a place with a mass grave would be a place that there would be a lot of angry spirits.
Oh yeah.
Because if after your death, if you care what happens to your body, like a lot of legends say, then that is not a place to be hanging out, because everybody there is going to be mad that their physical body was disrespected that much.
That's right. That's right. Now, Jake said he called out to the person, instructing them to rejoin the tour group. He noticed at that point that the weeds began to move very fast toward him, like something was running at him. Now, he was taken off guard and said he backed up, only for the weeds to stop in front of him. No one was there, but he recalls feeling as if he was being watched. Fife describes turning around, looking down the main path, and seeing a shadow figure. He said the figure appeared to look at him, then started moving toward him, but suddenly the figure made this strange sliding motion into the weeds and disappeared.
That's okay? Weird.
And that's when he said he knew for sure that that wasn't a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
That this weird slide that he did, he said it was just inhuman. And that's when it registered. This was not a person, you know.
That's creepy. Ugh.
But Fife also reports seeing as many as three shadow figures at one time on the front grounds of Desjardins. So, I mean, you know, sometimes quality surpasses quantity, and especially when we're talking about, you know, haunted stories, and with a place like Desjardins that's been closed to the public for several years, to have these recorded events and these experiences, it's just amazing.
Right.
And for someone like Jake Fife, who not only was from Virginia, but had the ability to be up and around there many, many times. The odds are really good that not only was he going to have experiences, he was going to have multiple and probably several of the same recurrent experiences, especially when it comes to the shadow figures that were apparent guardians of the building itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, you know, when we start talking about things like shadow people, which, you know, they come up, but if you notice the shadow people, when we're talking about these old abandoned hospitals and mental facilities and things, these shadow people, they show up when there's a lot of other activity going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when there's not only just a lot of negative energy, because we've talked about places that should have had a ton of negative energy and no real experiences to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you really fire up that negative energy. The patients that were there reported paranormal activity, and over the years, it just seems like it has drawn more, and especially without any human interaction inside that building, just kind of take over.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of becomes a meeting point for them.
So, Adam, you said you had a theory about all of this.
Yeah. And I'm going to preface it by saying I have talked trash about people who always go to demonic this, demonic that all the time.
Right.
So I don't think everything is demonic activity. And I do believe that there are just evil people in the world. There's just evil. But considering the type of activity at Desjarnet, do you think that there is a possibility that either Dr. Desjarnet had a maybe demonic attachment that caused him to do this stuff to these people, or did he acquire one after, like, he was already kind of an evil dude and into eugenics and stuff, but then as he started performing these sterilizations, that a demonic entity attached to him and pushed him further down that rabbit hole of let's do all these weird experiments on people and all that.
Yeah. You know what? That's not something I've considered, but that's not bad. I mean, I could get behind that theory. Cause like you said, he wasn't a nice dude.
No.
I mean, he was already a little off, especially with this, you know, this concept of eugenics. You know, anytime anybody starts spouting off about making a superior human being,
mm-hmm.
I'm always just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You've said enough.
Time to get
know
as,
exactly what you are.
Get as far away from that person as possible.
Right.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Adam, have you ever had a time in your life where you wish that life came with a user's manual?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Just trying to navigate life's challenges can really knock you for a loop. Whether it's changing careers, new relationship, becoming a parent, all of those things can just really turn your life on its head. Now, therapists are trained to help you out the cause of these challenging emotions and learn productive coping skills, which makes therapy the closest thing to a guided tour of life.
Oh, it's great.
And you know, it really helps. And I know so many people have a stigma about going to therapy and things like that, but that is where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp has connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists. It's convenient and accessible anywhere, 100% online. And I can honestly say that after filling out this questionnaire about the things that I was having some issues with, you know, BetterHelp connected me with a therapist and answered a few more personal questions for them. And I mean, I was on my way. And I didn't have to leave my house. I didn't have to make an appointment. I didn't have to try to arrange my work day so that I could get there. Because that's stressful in and of itself. And that's what you're trying to avoid.
Oh yeah.
So with BetterHelp, you avoid waiting rooms and appointment times and all of that, but you still get qualified therapy that you need.
Yeah, and that's one of the coolest things to me about BetterHelp is that you can do it over the phone. You can text with a professional that will help you through things. And you can do it if you're having issues in the middle of your work day. Well, sometimes you can't just leave work to go talk to your therapist. But you can text BetterHelp on lunch break or one of your breaks and get some help quickly. And if you happen to not be clicking with your therapist, it's super easy to switch and find another therapist that will click with you. And as the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. All you got to do is, like Matt said, fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. And then if things aren't clicking, switch. Get you another one. And it's super simple. There's no waiting rooms. There's no traffic or endless searching for the right therapist. And you can learn more and save 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/grave, G-R-A-V-E.
Yeah. Get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/grave, G-R-A-V-E. So if there was something going on with that property, you know, pre-hospital, maybe there was some Native American battle there. Maybe there was maybe it was sacred ground, whatever. If there was something like that going on, something that would attract, you know, spirit activity of all types.
Uh-huh.
And then they go and they put this hospital there. And here comes this doctor and something, he's susceptible and something taps into his psyche and it just says, yeah, you're on the right track. This is what we need to do.
Uh-huh.
You know, we gotta push harder. We've got to do more, you know, and it drove him, you know, it really drove him. And you see that because of his leadership style that, you know, he almost created this autocracy where he was the final say mm-hmm. on everything and nobody was allowed to question him. You know, that's what ultimately got him removed.
Right.
Which, you know, I kind of think that's one of those things where, you know, they're looking for a reason. They're like, we don't have a better theory, but we got to get this guy out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are we going to use to legally remove this doctor from this position? And they were like, well, he's a complete and total butthole and he treats everybody like crap and he doesn't listen to any of his colleagues
mm-hmm.
and he rules with an iron fist. Okay. Perfect. You know, and they get him out that way.
Right.
You know, that's what I kind of viewed that as.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, in all reality, people may have been going, man, this guy is off his rocker.
Yeah.
We are doing some horrible things to people and nobody cares. Nobody's stopping us. Nobody is asking questions. You know, somebody needs to stop this guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately they did, but the damage was probably already done.
Right.
And that negative energy was so, so strong by that point that, you know, it was already bringing, you know, entities in.
Mm-hmm.
To just feed there.
Yeah, because like we've mentioned previously, that paranormal sludge that I've theorized about where when you have so much negative stuff happening that it's like throwing buckets of tar onto the walls, it's going to stick. And the more buildup you have of it, the more the negative entities and even the benevolent entities get trapped there and stuck there because of this sludge, this tar that you've thrown around with all the negative actions and energies of the living. And also in that vein, I think places like this, if you were to try to clean, you know, if you try to clean tar up off something, you can get a majority of it up. There's still going to be some there. So I think this place, no matter what, unless it's razed to the ground, mm-hmm. you will always have some negativity there. And you may still, even if you raised it to the ground, mm-hmm. and that land would probably from now on be tainted in some way. And there would always be something happening paranormally at this place.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So what do you guys think? You know, these are some compelling stories. Do you think that Dejournette is a haunted facility? You know, we're really not able to investigate it, at least at this point in time. But the past investigations really lean towards somewhere that has multiple spirits, multiple entities, and a lot of activity. So tell us what you think.
Mm-hmm.
And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. You can go on Facebook and search Graveyard Tales, and you'll find us. We are, what, 6,000-7,000 strong now.
Yeah, close to 8.
Close to 8,000 members. And it's a fantastic place. It's a good place to have some fun and share some personal experiences and maybe some thoughts on some places that we discuss on the show. Then you can go check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show and you can become a patron. And we thank everyone that has donated to the show.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a huge difference in allowing Adam and I to continue and put out bigger and better content for our listeners.
Right.
Yeah. So, whoo, Lordy.
What a place, man.
What a place.
What an individual, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.